You have to facilitate inclusion.
Further your accessibility journey. There's no finish line to this work. It's just a constant and ongoing learning process. I didn't want my teammates to look at me as different. I just wanted to blend in. They just announced that I'd made the all-star team for my age group. I didn't want this to be a barrier. So instead, I just pretended to laugh when they laughed and pretended to smile when they smiled. Meanwhile, I missed an hour of everything my idol said. And that's why my motto is be on offense. And I have to remind myself how to be on offense, when to be on offense. What does it mean, though? Any event that I go to, any, you know, podcast I'm on, are there captions? Am I able to read lips? What accommodations are out there for a big conference or even a boardroom setting or a restaurant? Be on offense. And things get a little easier now. Am I always on offense? No. It's hard. Accommodating for yourself is a full-time job. On top of your full-time job.
Hi, friends. Welcome back to Think Inclusive, real conversations about building schools where every learner belongs. I'm your host, Tim Villegas. Today's episode is about what access really looks like when you slow down and pay attention, especially around hearing loss, communication, and the small choices that either include someone or quietly push them out. We talk about why this matters in classrooms and school communities, and how inclusive isn't just a value, it's a set of everyday practices that help people participate. Our guest today is Dustin Gianelli, the CEO and founder of HearsDustin.com, a consultancy that helps organizations build more inclusive and accessible workplaces. Dustin is profoundly deaf and has learned to navigate the world through things like lip reading, captions, and a whole lot of self-advocacy, bringing that lived experience into his speaking, coaching, and leadership work. We talk about his be on offense mindset, what it means to ask for what you need, and how educators can build access into classrooms without making it a big production, and why tools like captions often help everyone, not just the people you would expect. And there's a great side story involving a Michael Jordan basketball camp that really brings the idea of self-advocacy to life. Before we meet our guest, I want to tell you about our sponsor. This episode is brought to you by IXL. IXL is an all-in-one platform for K-12 that helps boost student achievement, empowers teachers, and tracks progress in one place. As students practice, IXL adapts to their individual needs so that every learner gets just right support and challenge. And each student gets a personalized learning plan to close gaps. Check it out at IXL.com/inclusive. Again, that's IXL.com/inclusive. All right, after a quick break, it's time to Think Inclusive with Dustin Gianelli. Catch you on the other side.
Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
Please join me in welcoming Dustin Gianelli, founder and CEO of HearsDustin.com, a consultancy helping organizations build more inclusive and accessible workplaces. Profoundly deaf since childhood, Dustin turned a perceived limitation into his greatest strength, the power to communicate, connect, and lead with empathy. He's a nationally recognized keynote speaker known for his authentic storytelling and insights on communication, inclusion, accessibility, and workplace culture. Today, he's here to challenge us to think differently about how we lead, listen, and show up for one another. Please welcome, here's Dustin. Oh, that was awesome.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Yes, thank you so much for being here. I'm just going to move my window around so I can see the questions. Dustin, I'm so glad you're here. One of the, I think, one of the areas and topics that we as an organization at MCIE, and then also this podcast, we don't talk enough about is hearing loss and just the deaf experience. So, you know, I am very comfortable talking about autism, intellectual disability, you know, multiple disabilities. I'm very comfortable talking about that. I am not comfortable talking about, you know, people who are deaf and hard of hearing. So that's why I'm so glad you're here and that you can just share your experience with us. So to get us started, you know, just from hearing you talk and seeing some of the content that you've been putting out, you've mentioned that your grandfather played a significant role in shaping your mindset. So could we start there? What was it about your grandfather that influenced your approach to life and advocacy?
Thank you for that opportunity. I always enjoy thinking of my grandfather, who was a big part of my life, my brother's life, my whole family. And see, my grandfather was a double amputee. And he got in a boating accident when he was in his mid-20s, hit the propeller and lost a hand and half his shin down. So he had a wooden leg and a hook.
Wow.
And as a little kid, you know, my earliest memories were helping him get dressed, you know, helping him do everyday activities, get him, you know, a glass of water, walk it to his bedroom or whatever it may have been. And I learned very quickly how to advocate for others, you know, and then advocate for myself. And because my grandfather had a visible disability, you know, he taught me the difference between invisible and visible disability. With my hearing loss, you don't really notice my hearing aids, especially on the screen, but I'm using my hearing aid for Bluetooth. I have the captions on. I'm reading your lips, Tim. You know, that's what makes this experience accessible. But I have to explain that. Whereas my grandfather had a hook and you saw that and you're like, oh, how can I accommodate you, sir? People don't necessarily ask me because I look normal, right? So that's what my grandfather really taught me. But most of all, he taught me this, PMA. Do you know what PMA is, Tim?
Enlighten me.
Positive mental attitude.
Okay.
you know, and life is tough, right? But he taught me how to look at the whole picture and not just the problem. Find solutions and turn negatives into positives. PMA.
Now, you were diagnosed with profound hearing loss at the age of 5. Can you tell us a little bit about that experience? How did your friends and family support you in that transition?
So for all the listeners out there, who remembers the school nurse's hearing exams? All of us, right? Repeat the words after me. Raise your hand when you hear the beep, right? 1 year, I passed no problem. The following year, I remember standing in that line with all my classmates, because you remember it was a very public event.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Are you deaf or not? You know, and I just remember that second year, there was a board or like a divider on the table where the nurse was going to be on the other side and the student would line up behind that divider, taking away my ability to. And it was registering my brain in that moment that I was a lip reader. So it took away my ability to lip read, but I didn't even know I was lip reading. I didn't even know that I was deaf. I didn't even know what deaf really meant, you know? No one in my family was hard of hearing or deaf. And I mean, I stepped up to the plate and did the best I could, but I remember the year before I could see their arm move when they pressed the button to make the beep go off.
Interesting.
And then I remember last year, you know, I could read their lips, but I couldn't for the life of me make out the individual words they were saying. I had no context. So ultimately I failed and went back to my parents. You know, they called my parents and they said, we think your son is deaf. And they were like, what? And that was where the journey began, 5 years old.
So it sounds like you had already experienced hearing loss before. So you got tested and diagnosed, right? And the year before, it sounds like you were compensating and didn't even realize that you were doing those things to understand what was happening and what was being said. So did your hearing loss happen even earlier, or had it always been there?
It couldn't have, and that is a theory. We haven't been able to prove it, right? At the time, my doctor and my mother decided that it very well could have been the virus chickenpox. Because it was a gradual decrease from age 4 or 5, we don't know, but it went down, you know, all the way up until about 12 years old, it finally stabilized and it's been about the same in the profound, you know, loss, both ears, high frequency, profound loss. And, you know, we don't really know the exact reason why, but that's what we think.
Oh, yeah. Interesting. What was it? So your parents and your family, once they realized that you were deaf and or hard of hearing, what did they go into? How did they want to support you? Were they trying to figure out what happened, or were they saying, okay, well, now that we know Dustin is deaf, how can we get him to understand what we're saying and communicate?
You know, it was interesting because my grandfather kind of set the tone for the whole family. We knew what a disability was and we just had to act on it. My mother immediately took me to the Boston Children for a real hearing exam, right? Mm-hmm. In the booth and everything. And same exact thing. I failed that and they realized I was severely hearing, you know, hard of hearing. And so we just immediately did what we had to do. And step two was go to the audiologist and, you know, get fitted for hearing aids and see what was out there, you know, figure out what insurance they had that could pay a portion of the hearing aids. You know, it's very challenging even today with insurance. Sometimes, you know, you're not covered at all and you have to pay out of pocket. So this was all new, but my parents jumped right in and just set me up for success.
Yeah. So something else that I've heard you say is your motto. And your motto is be on offense. So I'm assuming that's a sports reference.
Nailed it.
But what about that motto, is meaningful to you? And why choose be on offense as your motto?
So like I just said, my parents set me up for success, right? My older brother, you know, I remember the four of us being in the audiologist room, getting fitted for the first time. I actually just watched that old video cassette, you know, film of it. It was really special. Be on offense actually came 5 or 6 years later. I was at a basketball camp. So you nailed it with the sports reference. And it was in Chicago. And it wasn't just any basketball camp. It was actually Michael Jordan's. And
like the Michael Jordan.
The one and only Michael Jordan. It was amazing. Of course, my older brother and I both idolized him. It was a week-long camp. My parents surprised us. And we flew to Chicago, my first time in another major city, but not just any city. This city of architecture, you know. So I remember, you know, meeting him each day, whether it was a drill that he did or some sort of workshop. But midweek, he put on an auditorium speech. Like, he gave a keynote. It was going to be 1 hour. And as we're waiting for him, you know, we all get in there, and I thought I had a good seat. You know, I had to kind of accommodate for myself at the time. My parents, all the parents were invited. They sat in the back, and then all the campers were in the front. I mean, this auditorium was huge. Think of 1,000 campers from all over the world and the parents, too. Like, it was a huge auditorium in a college. My brother's age group was on the other side. So I had to accommodate myself. I'm sitting there, and I was about 30 or 40 feet from the stage, only for Michael Jordan to come out. Everybody started clapping. It was loud. He said something I didn't hear, but it was loud. Cut myself some slack. It quieted down. Then he started talking, and I just couldn't hear what he was saying. And I just missed out for a full hour. And it was up to me to just ask that counselor that was walking up and down the aisle, "Hey, you know, I'm hard of hearing. May I read lips? May I maybe sit up front?" And I would do that in class at school. But for whatever reason, you know, I didn't want my teammates to look at me as different. I just wanted to blend in. They just announced that I'd made the all-star team for my age group. I didn't want this to be a barrier. So instead, I just pretended to laugh when they laughed and pretended to smile when they smiled. Meanwhile, I missed an hour of everything my idol said. And that's why my motto is be on offense. And I have to remind myself how to be on offense, when to be on offense. What does it mean, though? Any event that I go to, any, you know, podcast I'm on, are there captions? Am I able to read lips? What accommodations are out there for a big conference or even a boardroom setting or a restaurant? Be on offense. And things get a little easier now. Am I always on offense? No. It's hard. Accommodating for yourself is a full-time job. On top of your full-time job. You know, and I own my own business, so it's challenging. You know, as a keynote speaker, I have to make sure I have the accommodations. But because I appreciate accommodations so much, I want to make sure that the companies that I'm speaking to, like Sony and Liberty Mutual and Peloton and Converse and Ralph Lauren, all these companies that I have the opportunity to speak to, I want to make sure their employees have the accommodations. Be on offense isn't just about me, Tim. It's about all of us. So that's my motto. And if you take anything from this conversation, it's be on offense.
After the break, we dig into what inclusion looks like in everyday moments, how communication, self-advocacy, and simple tools like captions can change the experience for learners and educators alike. Dustin also shares stories from coaching, music, and work that push us to rethink how we build access without overcomplicating it. This episode is sponsored by Adaptiverse. If you're a special education teacher, you already know the time problem. Every week, educators spend 15 to 20 hours manually adapting curriculum for students with complex communication needs, non-speaking learners, AAC users, and students with apraxia or language-based disabilities, creating personalized materials, building visual supports, and designing multiple expressive pathways is essential work, but it's exhausting, and it pulls teachers away from actually teaching. Adaptiverse changes that. Teachers simply describe what they're teaching and who they're teaching, and the platform generates grade-level lessons personalized to each student, with built-in scaffolds and multiple ways to show understanding. And these aren't watered-down worksheets. They're rigorous, engaging lessons that presume competence, built on 60-plus years of combined education experience. Adaptiverse has already powered more than 2,000 lessons in 35 states, with educators calling it life-saving and irreplaceable. If you're ready to get those hours back and focus on what matters most, visit adaptiverseapp.com to learn more. I like that. I like that, Dustin. I think that there's, especially for educators, because that is mostly who listens, there are other people, of course, who listen to this podcast, but let's just talk to educators for a moment. I think educators are by nature pretty like good-natured people. Like they want the best for their students and they sacrifice a lot, right? And so sometimes what happens is they end up sacrificing their own personal time, their health and wellness, because they are trying to do right by their, you know, students and their school. And what I like about what you say about Be On Offense is that it is really about advocating for yourself and advocating for your own needs. And then also not only advocating, but recognizing like what you actually need, you know? So for instance, what you're talking about in being in that crowd and not understanding your idol is you recognized a need that I need to be in a place where I can listen or I can read lips. And you didn't take that opportunity, but next time assessing what you need to do and then advocating for yourself, for your own needs, like that isn't, that's not selfish, you know, it's not selfish. It is taking care of yourself, and educators are notorious for not taking care of themselves. So I love it. Educators, be on offense. That's a great motto.
I'm glad you appreciate it as much as I do. And again, you know, it's not possible to be on offense every single day. But if you put yourself on offense and you have that mentality, it becomes easier to be on offense every single day, you know?
Yeah, yeah. So you also coached basketball, is that right?
I did.
Okay, so tell me about that, because was there any sort of communication barrier? How did you accommodate, you know, and accommodate for your needs as a coach, coaching basketball?
You did your homework, didn't you? I love it. And coaching AU sixth grade boys basketball was some of the best times. And it was my first year. They didn't know me. I didn't know them. We're all coming together for the first time. I'm watching them shoot around before practice is about to begin. And you mentioned about communication. The very first thing that we talked about was all about communication. I brought everybody over and, you know, the kids come in, they're excited and like, you know, shoot threes and just, you know, toss up the ball. As they come over, they're bouncing the balls. I'm like, hold the balls. They're like, oh, sorry. And I go, I didn't plan on saying this, you know, but what just naturally happened when the ball was being bounced was it was going to be challenging for me to hear in this echoey gym. And I said, all right, guys, what's the most important piece of basketball? What's the most important part of the game of basketball? A defense. Keep going. Ball handling. Not what I'm looking for. Keep going. Communication. What? Communication. Louder. Communicate. Right? And I said, now, how will you communicate with each other if you don't know each other? It's the first time you all meeting. How will you communicate without words? How will you communicate with your coach who is profoundly deaf and might not be able to hear you? That's what we're going to learn. We're going to learn how to play without even talking. We're going to know where we have to be on the court. We're going to know each other's plays. We're going to be connected, have fun, build a friendship relationship, and communicate. You know, so it was just really cool to see that to come to life. And they were like sixth grade, some of them didn't even know what deaf meant. So, you know, I wear hearing aids. They help me hear, just like glasses help you see. All right, so when you speak, look at me so I can read your lips. Being able to read you, and now I'm educating them what lip reading is. We didn't even get to the sport yet. That's how important the fundamentals and the foundation of communication is.
What was your position like in basketball? Like, what did you play?
I was point guard. So to your point, communicating, setting up the play, yelling all the time, right? It was very important to be vocal.
Oh, that's great. That's great. Do you have like a favorite? I'm getting off topic, but I played basketball in high school. I was like a swing man. I was okay. I was on my varsity basketball team, but I was okay. But some of my favorite players, it'd be back in the 90s, you know, like Jordan, Barkley, Magic, Kobe. You know who I loved was Allen Iverson.
Of course.
Yeah. Who were some of your favorite players?
You named them. Jordan was number one, but I'm a Celtics fan. So you got Paul Pierce, you know, Antoine Walker. You got some great characters in that era.
Yes.
Celtics weren't as good as they are now back in those days. But, you know, I missed the Larry Bird era and, you know, all that. But one, Paul Pierce, Rondo, Garnett, Ray Allen. I mean, those were the days too. So
are you from New England?
I'm from Boston originally.
You're Boston? Okay. Yes. I've got some Boston friends, so they're very excited right now. So
I live in Fort Lauderdale now in Florida. And you know, a lot of Miami Heat fans down here, of course.
Oh yeah.
They got knocked out of the playoffs. I was hoping we'd play them and maybe it would have been the final round, I guess, but they got knocked out.
That's all good. It's all good. So I'm curious about, you know, you said you use hearing aids. Did you ever, was American Sign Language any part of your like life and communication?
I went to a summer school for the deaf.
Uh-huh.
I went to mainstream school, K through 12. But summers from probably age 6 to like 7, very shortly after getting hearing aids, for like 4 years, 5 years, maybe every summer I went to this camp. We did summer homework and reading assignments together and whatnot. And, you know, there were folks that were individuals that were capital D deaf or lowercase mm-hmm. D deaf. Right. And for those listening, if you don't know the difference, capital D deaf, right? Deaf culture usually relies on sign language, may not be verbal, right? An oral communicator like myself. And so that's their language, sign language. Me being an oral communicator, while I'm profoundly deaf, a lot of people don't even realize the significance of my hearing loss. Without them, I don't hear high pitches. So birds chirping, bells, whistles, alarms, car horns, you know, trains beeping. If I'm on a run without my hearing aids here in Florida and it's very hot, so I usually take them out, I'm not hearing those sounds, you know? So that being said, I associated myself with deaf culture at a young age, but I never felt like to me that was my community.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wanted to play basketball with my brother.
Yeah.
You know? So I finally told my mom and I was like, hey, like, I think this is for me. And she's like, okay. And I just want you to know that this community is there for you. It exists, you know, and this is your decision.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that that's an important, it's an important thing to remember. We talk about self-determination a lot, you know, like we talk about making sure that we are giving people, you know, listening to people's voices and what they want. Right. And so what I'm hearing is you are saying, you know, this kind of community, I'm glad it exists, but it's not for me, at least not for me right now. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm not fluent in sign language, and I know some. I, you know, made an effort to learn it in sixth grade. I took a full semester in college. I practice every now and then when I meet people that are part of the deaf culture. But now there's so much technology and accessibility that allow us to bridge the gap. You know, there's actually an app for Zoom that you can invite an interpreter in real time. You know, there's companies out there that have services for the blind and low vision community that expanded their services to serve the deaf and hard of hearing community and provide real-time ASL interpretation on your phone. I mean, that's incredible. So just the amount of innovation that's happened, especially during the pandemic over the last 4 or 5 years, you know, it's fascinating, and we can only go up from here.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to tie what you said into this idea of inclusion, because the whole kind of purpose why we exist as an organization and this podcast is that we want people to think inclusive. We want people to, you know, look at their lives and their community wherever they are and ask the question, like, am I inclusive? Is this place, is this environment inclusive? Am I including everyone? So do you have any thoughts about how educators can include learners who are deaf and hard of hearing in school?
Absolutely. You know, it's a great question. One of the thoughts that came to mind was actually music related, and having gone to a karaoke event. Now, when you think karaoke, we can all sing along because you can read the lyrics, right?
Right.
How fun is that for the deaf community to realize what the artists are actually saying in the song? So just, when was it? Last October, the company InnoCaption, one of my partners, they invited me and a dozen others in the deaf and hard of hearing community to come together in California, spend time at their headquarters and do different events. They held an entire retreat, you know? So we did karaoke, we did go-kart racing, we did adaptive yoga, where we had caption provided so that, you know, challenging to be in this position downward dog and be able to read lips.
Right.
You know, and so I was at least able to look at the caption set up right next to my towel, my mat, and also see a piece of paper that had a picture of each position. Visual learners appreciate visuals, right? So as an educator, that's so important to think about how to make any experience adaptive and inclusive. And, you know, InnoCaption did a fantastic job. And if you don't know InnoCaption, they're an app that I use for all my phone calls. Especially when I'm in a loud setting, if I can't hear what's being said on the phone with my hearing aid Bluetooth, I can read through live automatic speech recognition or a live stenographer.
Oh, wow.
So I can read what's being said, save the transcript, review it later if it's an important bank or, you know, a doctor. You know, a call with a doctor, you know, you want to be able to review back. And it's just an amazing company. So they held that inclusive experience and I'll never forget it.
That is great. That is great. And, you know, you benefited from that, but imagine how many other people who maybe aren't quote unquote diagnosed, right, with, you know, that who are deaf or hard of hearing. But as people age, their hearing, you know, is reduced and diminished, right? And so all of these people would benefit from that type of support.
You know, closed captions were designed and created for the deaf community, right? Years and years ago, but now 80%+ of people that use closed captions are not deaf or hard of hearing. In other words, to your point, we all benefit from access. And that's why I believe the key to success in life is communication. Mm. And the key to communication is access. right? So, you know, whether you're an educator, you're in K through 12 or college, or, you know, in the professional world, that's the key to success in life, communication and access.
You mentioned music, and I'm wondering, I'm guessing our audience might have a question about how you experience music, because, well, there's probably some assumptions that are being made. So I'm just going to ask the question, how do you experience music, having hearing loss?
It's a great question. And I love music and I love dancing. I feel it. And when there's a good song with good bass that just has a good rhythm, my family would always laugh and joke when I was young, like, "You're deaf. How are you such a good dancer?" And I do have musical, genes, I guess. My dad was a drummer. My mother was actually a baton twirler in high school. She still brings out the baton. She brought it out at my wedding. It was awesome. But my Aunt Lucy, who's 91 years old, she does Zumba every day. It just, you feel it. And you, as a visual learner, you watch other people dance and you're like, "Damn, that was a good move. How can I adapt that? How can I do that?" And you watch these music videos. I would watch NSYNC, Backstreet Boys, Michael Jackson with my brother in the loft in our old house. And the big screen TV, and just put on these dances. And I mean, it was so fun. You learn to dance. But the assumption is too, that we can't hear.
Right. Yeah.
When I shut one hearing aid off, it allows me to feel the bass better. And then the other hearing aid allows me to hear the volume better.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So it kind of balances it for me. Now, I don't know if that works for everybody with hearing loss, but I suggest trying it just to see if it works well. And that's what I do in, a lot of loud settings, even conferences, and, otherwise it's just too much noise. It's too much.
Right. Right. I'm imagining, those with cochlear implants would do the same sort of thing, because I wouldn't be able to describe what they hear with the implants, but I imagine that sometimes you can't control how loud an environment is. But by taking, by adjusting the equipment and the hardware, then you might be able to control some of that.
Nailed it. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Are there other things that people assume about you being a deaf person? I'm just wondering if there are things that come to mind.
I mean, when you think of the term ableism, mm-hmm. right, and what others, how others perceive individuals, and this world wasn't designed for all of us in mind. Right. So it makes it really challenging for some to navigate everyday things, like going to the grocery store or having to get on a train or public transportation. So the assumption is always challenging. Like, can somebody that is blind or low vision or deaf or hard of hearing or has ADHD or dyslexia or, a wheelchair user, can we all navigate this journey? And if the answer is no, it's not a big investment to make an experience more accessible, and oftentimes in the corporate world, it's only an average of $500 to make an experience accessible for all.
Right. Right. And yeah, that's not too big of an expense, especially for, those large corporations.
Right.
Yes, exactly. Now,
but that's one of the things too I wanted to add to your question is,
yeah, go ahead.
Self-disclosure.
Mm.
Especially in the corporate world, Not every employee is disclosing their disability. And what we found is roughly 12% of employees are disclosing their disabilities, yet there's 1 in 4 people in the world that have some form of disability. So more like 25%.
Yeah. Wow. That's a surprising statistic. So yeah, only about 12%, you said. Wow.
Yeah. Hmm. And why is that, right? They don't want to be discriminated against. They don't want their manager to think less of them. You know, they've had an issue in the past where they were bullied. Whatever it may be, it's been a challenge. But, you know, I always encourage us to be your most authentic self and bring your true self to work. And that way we can all help each other. And just like Caption, we all benefit from that.
Absolutely. Now, you've also been involved with Adaptive Fashion. So tell me more about that.
Runway of Dreams. Yeah, that was a New York Fashion Week event. This was in, September 2023. An amazing experience. You know, there were 70 models, all with diverse disabilities and abilities, because again, I say that the word ability is in disability for a reason. We have the ability to do amazing things no matter what your challenge or setback is. And I saw 70 plus models run, you know, walk the runway, roll their wheelchairs on the runway, you know, whatever it took, they went down that runway and represented, you know, a dozen clothing brands like Gap, Tommy Hilfiger, Zappos, Adidas, Target. And, I wore adaptive sneakers with zippers on the sides for people that, you know, have limb differences or challenges, motor skills. I wore a sweatshirt that has slits on the side for wheelchair users to make it easier to, you know, put the sweatshirt on. And, you know, others had adaptive backpacks and one sleeve on their shirt if they only have one arm, you know? So just so much to think about in many layers of accessibility, but that's one. And adaptive clothing is growing more and more and more.
That's great. That is great. And I know that you have expressed importance, you know, not only in you know, all these other kinds of accessibilities, but especially video accessibility. So do you have a particular project or initiative that you're working on with that?
So I'll talk about my career just a little bit. When the pandemic hit, I completely shifted my industry as a sales professional and in marketing roles. And I ended up joining this video accessibility technology company in Boston to learn all about closed captions and video accessibility and really jump into the world of diversity, inclusion, and accessibility. And, you know, they are a big time champion in the space. So I spent 18 months there and realized, you know, a lot of my presenting to clients started with, you know, I'm profoundly deaf, I'm a lip reader, I value captions, and this is a pandemic. The captions weren't what they are today in terms of accuracy or even availability, right? So I struggled, but this particular company can caption all your videos within 3 days at 99.6% accuracy.
Wow, that's good.
Wow, that's good, right? Like, it's amazing, actually. And, you know, this isn't just for the deaf and hard of hearing community. This is for all of us, and especially those that, you know, may have autism or neurodiverse needs to read the words. It's so helpful. Break down transcripts, right? So that's when I realized I can do something big here and launch Here's Dustin. And I try to bring, you know, all these resources that I know about and utilize myself to my keynotes, you know, and I speak at a lot of different companies, and none of these engagements don't have captions. I make sure they all have captions, and that's for the in-person audience and the virtual audience.
I'm wondering, so this is a podcast, and the vast majority of people experience this podcast with audio. Now, we're recording video right now, so the video of this episode will be up on YouTube and Spotify, because I upload the video on Spotify as well. But I'm wondering, so I have a couple questions. How do you consume podcasts? Do you listen just like everyone else, or do you read transcripts, or is it both?
It's both. You know, especially if people talk over one another, like Joe Rogan podcast experience, you know, people tend to talk over one another at times, and it's very long. And I haven't gotten too into his podcast, but that's just an example. You know, I try to listen through my Bluetooth. If it's a quiet setting, I'll do pretty well. But if I'm outside, or if the speakers have background music or whatever it may be, it's definitely challenging. So the transcripts help a lot.
Yes, yes. And I'm wondering, do you utilize sometimes on Spotify and Apple Podcasts, when you pull up and play a podcast, you'll see the transcript as it's playing? Have you ever utilized that, or do you normally just, like, if it's the transcript on the website and you just read it?
So I do the music, Spotify music, reading the lyric that, you know, each word, one word at a time pops up. I love that. I haven't done that much for podcasts. I haven't been too into podcasts right now. I'm in Audible. So I am listening to books. And so trying to get more into books and educating that way. Been interesting.
That's great. But then you also do the same thing where you listen and read at the same time?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. That's fantastic. That's fantastic. Something that we've been doing recently with the podcast is also adding open captions. So we've always provided a transcript, but lately as I'm editing the video, we just put the captions right on the screen. So that way it's always available. Yeah,
exactly. And just for the listeners, the difference between closed and open captions, right, is open, always on the screen. You don't necessarily have the chance to shut it off. That's my preference. When I go to the movie theater, you know, I like the open caption shows, and that was new, and that was a result of the pandemic. You know, people realize, shoot, I can't hear. You know, I'm struggling because I'm not deaf, but I can't see people's facial expression through these masks. That's a whole nother conversation.
That is a conversation. So, we have a few minutes left. I wanted to mention, because you brought up the movies. I have not been to see a movie with open captions, but that is something that I've wanted to do, and I think it's more like my family. I'd have to convince my family to do it, because in my family, we are very split on whether we have captions on. I like captions. I like them, but not everyone does. And so I'm pretty sure if I brought my family to an open caption, at least two of them would not be happy with me. But that is an experience I want to have. So just putting that out there. But you mentioned about the masks, and I know we are, you know, years removed from, 2020, but, and in the COVID-19 pandemic, but there's still a lot of,
you know, health concerns just in general, and people still wear masks, you know, and that's totally up to them, of course. How was it not being able to read lips if somebody had, you know, a mask, you know, over their mouth?
Brutal.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I'll be the first one to touch on mental health and my bouts with depression over the years. And that was one of them, you know, and a lot due to my hearing loss and the challenges I face and, you know, the sudden loss of my dad and years ago, it's challenging. Mental health is challenging for me. And that was one of the hardest times of my life. I couldn't just go to a coffee shop and order my coffee or whatever. You know, there was a plexiglass and awkwardness and it's loud in there. And we're all wearing masks. We can't even see each other smile. I had to take out my phone and, you know, put the order on my phone. And what that ultimately did was it made us all realize how important communication is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, look at each other when we speak and, you know, be patient, be empathetic, be vulnerable, you know, and just do whatever it takes, especially in the deaf community. You know, we have far too many people try to say something to us and say it again, say something again. Oh, one more time. Never mind.
Right. Yeah.
I'll tell you later. And then they forget. I forget. But you'll never forget that feeling. You know, and it's challenging.
Yeah. Yeah. As we wrap up, is there anything that you want to make sure educators walk away from this conversation with?
Absolutely. I mean, going back to the be on offense mentality and just in general, there's no such thing as limitations. You know, it's, you put that on yourself. If you say you can't do something, that's on you. But I'm going to be the first one to remind you that you can do that. And as soon as you adopt the be on offense mentality, what that actually means is, to tie it back, is own your story, right? I have an acronym for the word offense. And it's own your story. Be who you are. Share your story. They're all valuable. In education especially, we have to educate one another. Share your story, you know, and facilitate the F. Facilitate inclusion. You know, you talked about how to make the classroom more accessible, more inclusive. You have to facilitate inclusion.
Further your accessibility journey. There's no finish line to this work.
It's just a constant, ongoing learning process. And if you're an organization, an education, you know, a school, you have new people coming in every year. So you learn about new and different abilities. Further the education, accessibility journey. E, empathize. Empathize through communication. Be empathetic, right? N, normalize self-disclosure. Normalize it. You know, like I said, there's 25% of people that have some form of disability, but only 12% disclose in the workplace. It's challenging. But S, show up authentically. Show up authentically. And E, empower change. That's what offense means to me. So there's a real meaning to it. And I hope, you know, all the listeners share this. You know, this is very important. How we communicate. If you're in a circle of four people and a fifth person comes over and they want to be part of that circle and it's a little awkward for them, everybody in that circle can open up their shoulders, which is an invitation for him to or her, them to join, and then bring them up to speed. Oh, we're talking about this movie. Have you seen it yet? Oh my God, yeah, I saw it.
you know, and now we're part of this conversation. And I say circle because now we're able to read each other's lips and facial expression. Right. So that's just one of many ways to communicate more effectively. It's just so important.
Yeah. Now I love that example. And the example you gave about just being in a circle and then sometimes you don't know, right. You talked about your disability being, invisible or not as obvious. Right. And if you're meeting somebody, you really don't know whether or not they have a disability or not. And not that it's that important for you to know the specifics, but as long as you are open and as long as you are inviting and you try to be and think inclusive, then you're going to make space for everyone, wherever you are. So,
exactly.
After everything we've talked about, access, communication, self-advocacy, and what it really means to show up for one another, we're going to zoom out just a bit. It's time for the mystery question, which gets into language, connection, and a fun what if that ties back to how we all communicate and belong.
Dustin, are you up for a mystery question?
Always.
Okay.
Hit me.
Mystery question. These questions are written by my 12-year-old daughter, who is an avid listener to this podcast. So
I love it.
So yeah, so here we go. This is the mystery question for today. If you could instantly learn one language, what language would that be and why?
Sign language.
That up to you. It makes sense, yep. Right?
Yeah.
It makes sense.
Sign language. And If this works, I would like to learn all 300 plus signed languages in the world instantly.
Wow.
Yeah. There are 300 plus signed languages. I mean, there's American Sign Language, ASL, there's British, French, there's Australian. People don't realize that.
Dustin, so if you go 350?
Over 300.
Over 300. Oh my gosh. I had no idea.
Yeah.
I guess it makes sense, right?
Yeah.
Wow. So my daughter has learned, she actually has a sign language book, like an ASL book. That she looks at the diagrams and she practices and stuff like that. And she's always been interested in that. That was not something that I mean, we encourage it, but it didn't start from me. It was all her. So that is interesting. I wonder if she knows that. And I kept thinking like, maybe one day we'll be able to like download things into our brain. And maybe that's a bad idea, but imagine, right, to be able to learn something instantly. And then, oh my gosh. So what's interesting about your story, Dustin, and language is, you know, you grew up not knowing ASL is something that you want. My parents are Mexican, right? And so they speak Spanish, but I do not speak Spanish. Like okay. I know very little and I could hold a very simple conversation, but I feel bad not knowing Spanish, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so I would like to know Spanish instantly. If I could know it without, you know, and just automatically become fluent, that's what I would do. So that's my answer. Yeah.
Love it. And similar to, you know, I'm Italian. Gianelli is a little bit Italian. And, you know, my wife and I want to go to Italy in the summer. So if I could learn Italian again, I was very good book smart, you know, middle school and high school. We had Italian class and just kind of forgot all of it, especially after my grandparents passed away and we didn't really practice in the household. But there's some really good, translation apps, and that's been really helpful too.
I know. Well, my kids and my family love Duolingo. So they keep telling me I need to get on that app so I can start, you know, learning some more Spanish. So yeah, I think my kids know more Spanish than I do at this point.
That's funny. I wanted to also just do a shout out and thank Jill Wagoner for inviting me onto this podcast as well. She's who teed us up. So Jill, if you're listening, thank you. It was great to meet you, Tim, and I appreciate your time.
Absolutely. Dustin, let's pull up your website to make sure we know. So it's here's Dustin at, I'm sorry, here's Dustin.com. And then I think that you're on all the socials. So, and I think they can just find you there. Is there anywhere else that you wanted to make sure people found you?
Yeah, LinkedIn is where I'm most active, especially my, you know, whereabouts and keynote engagements. You know, as a keynote speaker, I love sharing my story as a vessel to the big picture message, you know, and really helping organizations make their environments more accessible and inclusive. So if you are an organization that wants to bring me in to speak, please reach out, message me on LinkedIn. You can email me at dustin@heresdustin.com, and that's HEASDUSTIN. Here's Dustin.
Amazing. Amazing. Thank you, Dustin. And thank you, Jill. I really appreciate you mentioning Jill. Jill is an awesome friend and helps out the podcast and our organization. We really appreciate her. Dustin Gianelli, thank you so much for being on the Think Inclusive podcast.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
That was Dustin Gianelli. One thing I keep coming back to from this conversation is how much inclusion lives in the small everyday choices we make. Dustin reminds us that access isn't extra, it's foundational. Whether it's captions, how we communicate, or how we invite people into a space, inclusive design is really about noticing who might be working harder than everyone else just to belong. That feels deeply connected to our mission at MCIE, shifting systems so students with disabilities don't have to adapt themselves to fit school, but instead schools are designed with learner variability in mind from the start. One practical step for educators, take a look at one routine part of your day, morning meetings, class discussions, staff meetings, and ask who might this be hard for and what's one small change I can do to remove a barrier. Sometimes that's visuals, sometimes it's captions, sometimes it's just slowing down and checking for understanding. If this episode resonated with you, share it with a colleague who's building inclusive schools. Rate and review us on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, and follow Think Inclusive wherever you get your podcasts. Shout out to Team Italy for advancing through the quarterfinals of the World Baseball Classic. If you haven't seen what they do when they celebrate hitting a home run, you have to check it out. They drink espresso. I think we need to see more espresso machines in MLB dugouts. Orioles, I'm looking at you. Have you been watching the World Baseball Classic? I'd love to know. You can always email me at tviegas@mcie.org. Okay, time to roll the credits. Think Inclusive is brought to you by me, Tim Viegas. I write, edit, mix, master. I basically wear all the podcast hats and the baseball caps. This show is a proud production of the Maryland Coalition for Inclusive Education, scheduling and extra production help from Jill Wagoner. Our original music is by Miles Kredich with extra vibes from Melody. Big thanks to our sponsors, IXL and Adaptiverse. Visit IXL.com/inclusive and AdaptiverseApp.com. Fun fact for International Women's Day, while the world was celebrating women, 51-year-old Cecily Hernandez was out there winning gold. The French para snowboarder who lives with multiple sclerosis just took first place at the Milano Cortina Paralympics, beating competitors nearly half her age. Now, she's medaled at every Winter Paralympics since 2014. Aging, disabled, still shredding. This fun fact was adapted from the Facebook page, A Mighty Girl. Are you watching the Winter Paralympics? I'd love to know about it. Email me at tviegas@mcie.org. I read every single message. And if you've made it this far, you're officially part of the Think Inclusive Inclusion crew. Want to help us keep moving the needle forward for inclusion? Head to mcie.org and click the donate button.
Give $5, $10, $20. It helps us keep partnering with schools and districts to move inclusive practices forward and support educators doing the work. Find us on the socials almost everywhere at Think Inclusive. Thanks for hanging out. And remember, inclusion always works.
From MCIE.
Podcast Rule. Welcome in.
So you're running out of closet space. The good news? You don't need to stop shopping. You just need to start selling with The RealReal. The RealReal is the world's largest and most trusted resource for authenticated luxury resale. Whether it's that mini bag that can't even fit your phone or those boots you never fully broke in, The RealReal handles everything from photography and copywriting to shipping and pricing. So you can just sit back, get paid, and make room for things that actually feel like you. And with 10,000 plus new arrivals every single day from top designers like Prada, Celine, Louis Vuitton, and Loewe, all for up to 90% off retail, you're bound to find something perfectly on brand to fill that extra closet space with. Plus, right now, you can get an extra $100 to shop when you sell for the first time. Make room for what feels like you. Go to TheRealReal.com to start selling and get your extra $100 to keep shopping at TheRealReal.com. That's TheRealReal.com. Terms apply.